or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
First of all, I suppose I'd be being disrespectful if I didn't wish all of you who celebrate Easter a happy Easter. Even though I am an atheist, but I certainly do respect the traditions of all folks. As Passover, you know, I am an atheist, but last night I led a Passover Seder, an atheist Passover Seder. In case you're curious, it has nothing to do with work, but in case you're curious to see what I did, I actually posted my little agenda. It is a Haggadah-free Passover. Haggadah is like the booklet that says the prayers and stuff. But kind of a secular humanist Passover Seder, Haggadah-free. If you're interested, just go to my website. I outlined it there. You might want to... There are 8 days in Passover. Actually, I think you can actually do a Seder, if I'm not mistaken, any of the 8 nights. My blog is Marty Nemko. That's M-A-R-T-Y, the usual way you spell Marty, Nemko, N-E-M-K-O, .blogspot.com. Okay, enough of that. I love these particular shows. I do them about once a month. No guest. It's all about you and me. I will offer some career tips, my favorite ones I've been assembling over the last few weeks in preparation for the show, as well as, but the main thing is I will be trying to answer your work-life questions. If you are stuck, unhappy, the worse the problem, the better, because it feels like the stakes are higher and I can make a bigger difference. So if you got a big-time work problem, either because you're unemployed and scared, you are well-employed and scared, unemployed and suffer from, as the sociologist Durkheim said, anomie, feeling like what the heck is the meaning of life and what is this? Is this all there is? Or you're self-employed and you're wondering about how to take your business to the next level, or you're afraid your business is going to go into the toilet, or you're thinking about starting a business, want to run the business by idea, by me. One more thing I want you to suggest. If you are a job seeker and you... would like to run your 10-second pitch. Everybody knows you got to have an elevator pitch these days, a 10-second pitch that's going to try to convince whoever you're networking with or cold calling or whoever that they should hire you. Run your 10-second pitch by me, right? Or you run a parallel version of that is maybe you've got your resume and you've got the summary at the top or the objective or whatever. You want to run that by me. I will give you my honest thumbs up or thumbs down and hopefully suggestions for improvement. For all of those reasons, you're calling for what I call now a three-minute workover or a career makeover. This is the time to call before the lines get packed, so you don't have to sit on hold for very long. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko for that three-minute workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. So, as I said, I'd like to, while I'm waiting for the calls to come in, share with you some of my favorite tips that I've been assembling for you that are work-related. This first one is from my new book, How to Do Life, subtitled What They Didn't Teach You in School. We are often told, especially on Easter and in church and in synagogue and in mosques and whatever, to be nice. And yet in the real world, as I thought about in writing this book about, you know, how to do life, what they didn't teach you in school, I thought, you know, that often backfires. If you're too nice, too early in a relationship, it almost makes you seem either desperate or you're trying too hard, or they take you for granted. They think, oh, he's person nice all the time, so I really don't have to be that kind to this person. There's no fear. In the real world, we get more of what we want when we have this, when people are just a little scared of us or a little feeling they got to work to get our favor, to work to get us to be nice to them. So I encourage you to think twice before deciding, oh, I'm going to just be as nice as I can. Like, let's say you just got a new job. So, oh, I'm going to be really nice to everybody. Yeah, I don't want you to be mean, but being a little neutral and withholding your niceness until you feel it serves you. Now, you're not a machine. You're not an automaton. I'm not saying you need to be a machine-like about it, of course. But keeping in mind that excessive niceness too early can actually exert a price upon you, but treat it like a tool to be dispensed as appropriate might be a useful technique. Anyway, I want to give out the phone number again. If you would, if you need some career help of any sort, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and here on KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Next tip I'd like to suggest is this. Sometimes you've had a meeting with somebody. It could be a one-on-one meeting. It could be a meeting in a, you know, in your workplace with many people, and it didn't go well. So they were angry at you. You were angry at them. You embarrassed yourself. You screwed up, whatever it is. There's a natural tendency to want to fix it, to, oh, make a call and see if you can either apologize or defend yourself or whatever. Sometimes the best solution, amnesia. Pretend it didn't happen. Either the other person is going to forget it happened, or you've certainly, you've let it fade into the recesses of the person's mind. The person is, it's less likely to have the emotional charge that it had when you first annoyed that person, or that person annoyed you, or whatever. So very often, the best approach is kind of a very non-Western approach. Do nothing. Sometimes doing nothing is the wisest approach. Another tip. I was thinking, I do this a lot in preparing for the show. I think back on the universe of clients. Now it's almost 4,000 of them. And I try to think about universals, things that are that would be applicable to a lot of folks. And I flashed upon all of the very artistic clients I have. I am, by nature, I very much have a yin and yang. I have two sides to me. I've got this very, you know, no-nonsense, practical side. But I'm a musician at my core. So there really is a very strong artist part of who I am. So I get more than my share of artist clients. Artists I define broadly, musicians, performers, comedians, you know, etc. Magicians. And, as of course, there's many exceptions. But as a group, they tend to kind of not stop to think about spending, how much they're spending. They're creative. They're discursive. They're free-flowing. And, of course, in that, they end up spending a lot more money without really thinking about the impact of that on their lives. By the time they realize, they just kind of suppress out of their mind the size of their MasterCard bill, or that they have nothing in retirement or whatever, or that they're mooching off of the person they're either living with or their parents or whatever. And of course, as a group, artists, alas, don't make a lot of money unless you're really a top of the chart superstar. So if you are whether you're an artist or an artsy type who tends to not be that practical and focused on money, especially if you want to try to pursue your art as your career, I invite you to try, at least, to stay more conscious about your spending. If you can't do it yourself, have your romantic partner or your parent or whoever it is who's supporting you, at least in part, to be gently reminding you, because nagging doesn't work. Nagging just makes you get defensive, but you will have more freedom to pursue your art if you're not spending a lot of money. And you'll be less desperate, for example, in an audition. If you know you're at the brink of losing your apartment and not being able to pay the rent or your mortgage and having to sleep in your car, you're going to be really desperate in that audition or that job interview. So if you cut your expenses and realize that contentment rarely comes from purchasing stuff, you will actually not only be less insecure financially in practical terms, but your lack of desperation will show up in the way in which you audition, job interview. And when you don't get, you know, so many people audition and only a small percentage get the job, get the role or whatever, you won't be so depressed afterwards. So that's a thought. Anyway, I'd like to give out the phone number again. If you could use some career help, whether you're anything from an artist to a clerk to a CEO to a self-employed person, I'm in my 24th year now doing the show, and generally I can at least give you a baby step forward. There's no problem too serious. I'd love the chance to help you. That's the meaning of my life is totally enhanced by the fact of when I can help whether you, my listeners, or my private clients, or my friends, enhance their career. So this is a great time to call. Phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco for what I call a three-minute workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Next tip, and it's kind of related to the previous one. Sometimes people don't feel guilty about letting other people support them. They rationalize, oh, well, I do the house cleaning around the house, or I do this, or I stay home with the kids, and etc. And of course, those things have value. But I like to think, and again, as I look back on my almost 4,000 clients and ask myself, who are the ones that are happiest? Not happy, ha-ha, but most content with their life. It's generally those that are self-supporting. Even if they have a wealthy wife or a husband or parents or whatever, even if they got a major trust fund, there is something core to work, being productive, being core to one's identity. And if you've somehow suppressed that notion but still find yourself unhappy, I do invite you to think about how you could make some money. Because people are not paying you money for not contributing something to the world. What could you do that is ethical? Ethical is always primary. I swear that it should be number one. But within the bounds of your ethical boundaries, what kind of work could you do that would pay you money? Not only would that help you contribute to the world, but it also shows the person you love who's supporting you that you don't view him or her as simply a cash cow. But that indeed you respect them. I had a client just 2 days ago, made me so sad. Sweet guy, nice guy, married to a woman, and he is having a heck of a time landing a job. To be honest, he's not the most driven guy. He's not the guy who's going to go 40 hours a week door to door and make phone calls and LinkedIn a million connections. And he's a reasonable guy. He's not a bad guy, but he's not driven. And he's now been unemployed for 8 months. And his wife has been threatening him for the last 3 months. If you don't get a job, I'm leaving you. And I got an email from him yesterday after the session we had Friday, saying his wife is leaving him simply because he's not bringing home the bacon. I think that's outrageous. You know, we say we love somebody for that person, you know, for who they are. And yet, because he's not a cash cow or she's not a cash cow, the person's leaving. Anyway, so whether you're male, female, straight or gay, it doesn't matter. But I invite you, whether you are the person who's looking for work or the supporting person, I guess my message is, please don't let money triumph over love. Try as much as you can. Yes, there's an occasional time where a threat can motivate somebody to work. Absolutely, I'm aware in the real world that sometimes a threat motivates somebody to get on the stick. But I can't think of anything that would be more destructive to a relationship than somebody who's a romantic partner saying, hey, if you don't bring home the bacon, I'm leaving you. Anyway, just a thought there. Again, the phone number. This is first time I can remember in ages, maybe because it's Easter and people are, you know, doing church things and post-church things. But if you would like if you have some career help of any sort, this is a great time to call. I've got a whole hour worth of tips I can give you. It's not a problem. I just like to help you. So if you want some help, just the phone number here for a three-minute career makeover, 415-841-4134. That's the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco here on KLW, 415-841-4134. And my announcer, board operator, engineer, whatever you want to call her, Joanne Marr, reminds me indeed that conflicts over money are the number one reason for divorce. Kind of sad. Where is the love, as they say? And now we do have calls here, so let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, Marty. This is a long-time call coming.
Good.
I just don't have any motivation.
Okay.
And I don't understand. I have all the abilities. I have a modest education, but I'm educated well enough.
Mm-hmm.
My last job was as an automotive closer.
Oh, God. You mean a close? You mean a sales guy, F&I guy?
Yeah.
F&I is finance and insurance, the guy who gets them to buy their financing or their insurance through that company rather than through the car dealership, right?
Now, I did a bit of that, but mainly just closing the deal where they won't quite jump over the fence.
Oh, right. So they got the sales guy there, and then they got the heavy hitter back there who comes out and hits them to close them.
Or aligns a salesman with the sale if he's off track a little bit. Show the customer which way they should really go to purchase. You're helping people basically.
Well, sort of. Anyway, you're lacking motivation. Now, the biggest reason people lack motivation is one of two things, and I'm curious if either of those apply to you. You feel like even if you worked hard, you busted ass to land a job, then in the end, your life's not going to be that much better anyway, so why the hell do it? Is that operative in your case or no?
Very true.
Okay. So, if that's what's really true, because that's at the core underneath it. So, if you think your life's going to suck anyway, then what you and I are going to work with on this phone call is how to improve your life enough so you say, hey, my life will be good enough to make me want to work hard to look for a job. Does that sound like a good use of the next few minutes of our time?
Well, if I could preface it with a couple of facts for you.
Please do.
I'm homeless right now.
Okay.
And that's, I live in my van, and that's through choice.
Okay.
I really enjoy that life.
Okay.
And I'm 60 years old.
Yep.
Age has never been a barrier. I can get whatever I want, basically.
Great.
Money comes and goes whenever I want it. I get it, and I have probably $10,000 in the bank.
Okay.
Because I'm very modest in my spending, like you were talking about a while ago.
Excellent.
But it just bothers me that I'm not at least donating my time to the Salvation Army or doing something to help people. That's really what bothers me, is that I'm not doing something productive.
Right. And you said to me, yeah, it's definitely right that you feel your life sucks anyway, so why bother? So do we need to improve some aspect of your life or show that we can improve some aspect of your life enough to give you hope? Hope is one of the most important words in the English language. Do you need more hope that you have a greater chance for contentment, or is your lack of motivation coming from some other source?
Truthfully, I don't know. I've been like this for many, many years.
Okay.
To where I'll work for a while, get good money, and then I'll just go ahead and kick back and enjoy my life.
Okay. Could you enjoy, when you say that, if what you view as work is the yucky part of life and enjoy your life is when you're not working, if we could get you to make work more fun, would that motivate you more?
I'll be honest with you, I have fun when I work.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I'm usually the boss and I have a lot of fun and everything. It's just that I just see better ways to spend my life.
Why? But give me an example. What's a better way? Let's use the, I'm going to take the example you gave. You said volunteering at the Salvation Army.
Mm-hmm.
What makes that less desirable an activity than the other fun you might have in your life?
The responsibility of having to be there and get up at a certain time responsibility. I got to say that about myself. I don't like responsibility.
First of all, I love your honesty. That's the kind of guy I can help when you're honest. So let's take a look at that. Do you hate getting up in the morning? Is it that you hate getting up in the morning, or you just hate knowing you got to be somewhere at a particular time, anytime?
The obligation.
Okay. And let's look at that specifically. So let's say I was the guy who could hire you at the Salvation Army. And what goes through your head that makes you say, that's a yucky obligation. I don't want to do that. Even though I have fun on the job, I'd be contributing to the world, helping the good folks who are trying to rehab their lives who work at the Salvation Army. What makes you say, that obligation is too painful?
I without knowing what the obligation would want me to do, you know, I did a little volunteer work early last year. And it seemed like it was kind of abusive.
What would you want? Right. So let's create a great job description for you. Would you like the ideal job description for you? If there was a job that was totally tailored for you at the Salvation Army, would you take it?
I think so.
Let's fantasize. Let's allow ourselves to fantasize for a minute. Let's say I said you could create the job description that would make you excited enough that you would say the obligation of getting up in the morning is smaller than the excitement about the job. What would the job description look like?
Basically my own hours or at least something, you know, later in the day.
Okay. Later in the day. Let's say I said, I'll allow you to come in noon every day. What else would you want to make you excited enough that you would actually pursue that?
That's basically all I really ask, because volunteer work is volunteer work, you know. I mean, it's you know, getting out there to volunteer to do whatever they need you to do.
Okay.
But I think basically my problem is that getting that first foot out the door.
Okay. So I'm just playing here. We're not done yet. I'm a pit bull. I will not let you go until we're feeling happy about the plan. If I said that you're going to tomorrow morning at noon, not in the morning, you're going to sleep in as long as you like. But then when you're ready, when you're good and ready, it could be 3 in the afternoon, you're going to go and you're going to look pretty good and you're going to go into the Salvation Army and you're going to tell them your career non-negotiable. I am interested in volunteering for you, but I am available only in the afternoons, and I would appreciate if there was actually even some flexibility as to what time I showed up. Is there any possibility of that? If you make known your career non-negotiables, that makes it, it may not be possible to Salvation Army. Maybe you'll have to go to 10 places till somebody says yes, but you've taken control of your life. You maximize your chances of it happening. Being honest, no BS now. Do you, what feels good and bad about that plan?
Well, I've fantasized about that many times.
Okay.
Many times.
Okay. And what stops you?
I just can't rationalize myself to get out and do it. I mean, I'll do other things. I mean, I get out and work out every day, mm-hmm. most days. I mean, I do a hard workout, mm-hmm. but to get out there, and I've even looked for a couple of times, I've looked for the Salvation Army, but I don't have a phone book or and that's just a weak, I just have weak excuses, to be honest with you.
Right. So if we, let's take it a baby step at a time. If I said that after you get off the phone, you're going to take a walk to some store that has a phone book, and you're going to look up the Salvation Army, and you're going to write it down. And then you're going to make a point that tomorrow that you're going to go, you're going to walk in, and you're going to say, I'm not the most reliable guy. I mean, no, I wouldn't say it that way. I am available in the afternoons, ideally with flexible hours, flexible start times. I am a very willing worker. I've had good jobs in the past, and I'm looking to give back. Might there be an opportunity for me here? Do you think that you would resist doing that tomorrow, or do you think you would do it?
Sounds good now.
What's going to happen? Okay, that's fine. I love your honesty. So what would go through your brain and says, to heck with it, I'm just going to go work out?
You know, if I had an appointment, I always keep them. I'm reliable. I am reliable, that's for sure.
Wow, that's great.
I mean, I'm not a flake. I mean,
great.
In that sense.
So could you make?
Reliable. If I say I'm going to do something for somebody, I do it. There's no
so
doubt
if you,
about it.
Let's play. Let's say for in theory, I want you to do it for me. You've got it. I'm giving you a 2 o'clock appointment at the Salvation Army tomorrow. You're going to do it, and after you go there, you're going to call me in my home. You're going to email. I don't know if you have computer access or not. You're going to call me, or you're going to email me, and you're going to let me know how it went. That's an appointment. Would that make you do it or not really?
Yeah, I would. I would. I mean, I'll tell you what, Marty, I'll try 99% tomorrow to try it. I'll give you a call next week. I'll try it tomorrow. And that's Monday. That's almost like an appointment in my head.
Exactly. That's the little mind game I'm trying to get you to play. You say, when you have an appointment, you do it. So can you trick yourself and say, make these appointments? I'm not, you know, some people are not morning people. If you not, you know, I'm not going to try to turn you into somebody you're not. But
no, I'll hop on the computer tomorrow and I'll find out the location of the local Salvation Army, and I'll be there tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
I love you. That's fabulous. And I also love that you offered to call back next week and let us know how it works. We're all rooting for you. You want to give back. It's fabulous.
I appreciate that.
And I appreciate you. Thank you so much for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Have a happy Easter, Marty. Thank you.
Yeah, you too. All right. It's time for your resurrection, your rebirth. All right, let's go back to the phones. I'll give out the phone number. If you want a 3-minute career makeover, workover, obviously, my definition of 3 minutes is very flexible. Sometimes it's 1 minute, sometimes it's 12. I don't care. All I care about is helping you. So if you could use some career help, the price is certainly right. Zero, I like to call it. Zero, zippo, nada. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko for that 3-minute workover is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Marnie. My name is Molly. I'm 33 years old. Mm-hmm. I have a good job. Mm-hmm. And I'm always looking for better and better opportunities. And I get a lot of really great interviews. But I think I have one barrier to actually getting the job after going through the interview process. I've gotten feedback that I come across as too nice.
Right. That's just what I was saying. Did you hear that at the beginning of the show? I said that. That's a danger.
Yeah, it's a danger. And I think, you know, maybe I have been really accommodating and courteous, and I do go in with that mind frame when I go to an interview, because I want to seem like a nice person, mm-hmm. and I want to seem warm. But I think another thing that works against me is that I sound really young.
You do.
I do, and I look kind of young.
Okay. Let's work on that.
Okay.
That's great. Okay. So now, of course, you know I direct plays, so I know a lot about how to create an impression. Have you carefully chosen your interview outfit so that they make you look a little older and more mature and more businesslike?
I mean, I do choose sort of more conservative clothes than I would normally wear. You know, just typical professional attire.
Okay.
But I would call it, you know, age appropriate. I don't go for a full suit or something like that.
Right, sure. How about color choice? If you wear pinks and pastels, they may make you look too cutesy. Would it be appropriate as a balance? Should you wear a color like grays or, you know, a medium to darker blue, something that's not going to make you look too young?
Right, like tans.
Right. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Okay? Now, and I don't want to turn you cold. Now, what kind of... There are certain jobs where warmth is invaluable. I'm going to ask you a little more about yourself in a minute, but like jobs like people who work on the phone, either telemarketing or customer service or any of that kind of stuff, warmth is invaluable. And
right.
So, what kind of jobs are you searching for, and are there jobs you should be searching for where your natural warmth would be a plus rather than a minus?
I work in online marketing.
Okay.
So, you know, it's not exactly customer facing, but maybe I work with clients as like an account manager.
Okay.
Or sort of partnership marketing, where I am trying to build relationships with people. So I think maybe, you know, once I'm in a job working, that serves me well. It's just a matter of getting past the point where people don't think that I'm going to be tough enough or strong enough, because also I think, you know, everyone has a different approach to what they're assigned to do, and I don't think that I need to... I mean, maybe this is wrong, you know, but my approach in life isn't just to be tough.
Absolutely right. You do not
demanding.
Want to be. No, of course not. You get more flies with honey than vinegar in general. There's a time to be tough, but generally you want to be relatively nice. Now, I want to pretend if I were directing you in a play, I would be telling, and unless I was having you playing somebody who is pleasant, absolutely, and positive and nice, but who is credible and doesn't sound like a young teenager, which you can sound like you're 33, but you do sound younger. So all of us, just like that sounds like a teenager.
I see.
Right? And so I'm working with you right now on your voice because I can't see you. If I were directing you in a play, I'd look at your work at your physicality. I'd want to make sure your physicality was that of a 35-year-old credible businesswoman. But for in terms of your voice, all of us have a range. For example, I could talk at the top of my range. This really is a natural voice for me, but it's annoying. So I try to not use that part of my voice. I use the part of the range of my voice that is appealing, that is credible without it sounding like I'm trying. I just use the part of my voice that's the sweet spot. So right now I want you to be conscious. I want you to use the part of your voice and the tone of voice. I want you to pretend you are playing the role of a 37-year-old who is a nice person, but who's very credible. She's the CEO. She's not alone. She is the CEO, and she's running a meeting, and she's using not only the pitch of the voice, but the pacing. Notice my pacing right now. I'm trying to model it. I'm very deliberate. I'm not afraid to make pauses, so it feels powerful, it feels credible. I want you to talk like that, using the range and the part of the range of your voice that is natural, not trying too hard, but you are playing the role of a 37-year-old CEO introducing yourself at a meeting. Do it now.
Okay, I'm going to do that, but I think it's important to, you mentioned this, it's important to sound authentic.
Right.
And if, you know, I don't believe that people should have to change themselves like that. If, because I would say this is my mid-range.
Okay, and the mid-range is much better. I really am glad you asked that question about authenticity.
Okay.
There are different sides to all of us. There's a side of me, if I've had two or three glasses of wine, which I only occasionally do, but if I do, and my feet are up and I'm hanging out with Barbara, my wife, or with my friends, I'm a different person than when I'm on the radio, and I'm a different person with each every client of mine. Sometimes I'm highly intellectual with my clients. Sometimes I'm much more playful. I adapt, I pick out different sides of who I am to adapt to the situation, rather than being a narcissist and insisting I'm just going to be one way all the time. So The same person when you are hanging out with your friends is, I would imagine, very different than when you are going for a job interview. So I'm merely asking you to bring out the side of yourself that is the professional side of yourself in voice, in body language, in demeanor, and demonstrate that. So right now, that's not being a phony. It's that side of you. I want you right now to demonstrate you are introducing yourself to me as though, let's say, I'm the job interviewer and I'm asking this question. And I simply, as so many job interviewers ask, well, Molly, tell me something about yourself. Answer it as the CEO woman would.
Okay, let me think.
Take your time.
So my name is Molly. I have 10 years of experience in online marketing and have worked with top entertainment and media brands throughout my entire career, and I have built brands from the bottom up and also worked with well-known brands to help augment their reputation.
That is better. Off the phone, I have two assignments that I want you to work on.
Okay.
Number one, if you have either an MP3 recorder or a tape recorder or something, I want you to record yourself and keep practicing until you are happy with the way in which you're sounding.
Okay.
The other thing I want you to do, I'm guessing that even with practice, you are still going to sound young. And whenever you've got a problem, whatever, any of my dear listeners, if you are obese, if you are old, if you have a childlike voice, whatever it is, I invite you to preempt the objection with humor. When you go into an interview, somewhere at the right moment in the interview, you might say something like, you know, I am well aware that my voice sounds very young, and I certainly hope that I'm well aware that I have to work twice as hard to establish credibility because my voice sounds young. If you acknowledge that with a little lilt and humor in your voice, it preempts the objection, and they actually respect it. It's like if I were in a wheelchair, and and I didn't say a word, it's going to be this somehow subconscious barrier between me and the employers, in some employer's mind. But if I say, you might wonder, you know, is my being in a wheelchair going to be a barrier? Well, here are the ways in which it might be, and here are the ways I've actually used it as a plus. And you do it with a little bit of humor, suddenly the barrier of the wheelchair begins to dissipate, at least in most people. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so bring it up before anyone else has the chance to think it and make a decision based on it.
You might. And also, as you're practicing in front of that tape recorder, remember, CEOs are authoritative. They sound confident. They're crisp. Notice, I'm trying to model it here. The way in which I say the words, there's a dynamism in it. So I encourage you to try to practice. You're playing a role. For purpose of this exercise. Eventually, yes, I want you to be yourself and that side of yourself, but I want you to practice having a CEO demeanor. And if you don't know what a CEO demeanor, if you need some more role models, watch C-SPAN. Go to C-SPAN.org, which C-SPAN shows all of the Senate proceedings, and they show a who's who of the great corporate leaders, nonprofit leaders, senators, etc., presenting in front of Congress. They know how to be credible. And so you use them as some role models if you want. Generally, it's useful to use the same gender as a role model. So find women who you admire, who you think are great role. Who is the woman who you think is the model of professional? She could be an actress playing that role, or she could be that. Is there somebody, a real CEO, a real executive, or somebody who plays a female executive on TV or in movies? Is there somebody who you really admire?
A female business leader that I really admire, or even just an identity.
Right.
Like a news identity.
Right. So it could be Meg Whitman, or it could be Carly Fiorina, or it could be the woman who ran Autodesk before she got fired. But any of those people? Or Madeleine Albright?
I'll think about it, but I think I know people within my organization that I would study.
I love it. I love it. And, again, you would do me a favor. I'm on this kick now from the last caller who said he was going to call back next week. I would love it, and I think our listeners would love it, if you've practiced and worked your ass off on it this week, and then you call next Sunday back into the show, and you show us, I'll ask you the same question. Tell me something about yourself, and I want to see, see if you've improved. How's that sound?
Okay, I'll try that. I'll try to practice this week. I'll give you a call back. And let you know how it goes.
All right, very good. And one more thing. Sometimes you can use that natural childlike voice as a strength. Sometimes it's a way of disarming people. People think that, I can take advantage of her. Like the previous caller was a car dealer. If a woman sounds, she's got this young, cutesy voice, they're thinking, I can take advantage of her. But if in fact you are no nonsense, you can use it as a plus. And you can even say that it can be used as a plus. That's another way to deal with the voice thing.
It's unassuming.
It is. It's disarming is the word. Yeah.
It often lets me deliver bad news gently.
Bingo. And you can say, that's another way in your job interviews, as you preemptively explain it, you can say, it's actually a plus. It's kind of endearing to certain clients. It's a plus. And as long as I show that I've got credibility and that I've got the substance to me, I'm not just fluffy, that voice can actually be a plus for me. Can you see how a combination of selling that natural voice is a strength, but also moderating it, realizing that you can turn it on and off as a technique? I have African-American clients. Oh, Barack Obama does this perfectly. He sometimes sounds like the whitest guy in America when he's talking to certain audiences. And when he talks with largely black audiences, he sounds very Southern black. He realizes that accent is a tool. And he uses the tool as appropriate. So you can use your more childlike or your young woman voice as appropriate and your more businesslike voice as appropriate. It's a tool. Does that make sense?
Definitely.
All right.
To fit the situation.
That's right. Okay. Well, thank you for contributing your situation to work with Marty and Emco. I look forward to hearing from you next week.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. You take care, Molly.
Bye-bye.
Bye. You are listening to Work with Marty Nemco. All our lines are lighted up, so I will not give out the phone number. But kick back with your latte or whatever it is you're drinking this Easter Sunday and enjoy my efforts, hopefully, to help people with their career problems. Let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, what's up? C-SPAN, that's pretty sharp, man.
Thank you.
The first caller you talked to, guy, homeless, living in a van, I could really relate. He really hit the nail on the head when you were talking about just the sense of obligation and expectation and how that can just be overpowering. And you don't want to put yourself in situations where you feel like you might fail. The one thing, though, that kind of stuck with me is I was like, okay, yeah, I can apply this to myself. But when you said, whatever time you get up, and it doesn't matter if it's at 3 o'clock, just go out and go to this place. And that's kind of where I often get hung up in the in-person section of job hunting is, I can kind of be a little OCD, and I'll get in my head, okay, well, I'm going to go to person X, and I'm going to make a really forceful, or to company X, and I'm going to make a really forceful presentation. And then, I just, I, And that's the same reason why it's tough for me to work a 9-to-5, is because it seems like it's so effortless for everybody else to be at a certain place at 8 o'clock looking presentable every single day. And for me, it just feels so overwhelming. It's like you can pull it off for 1 or 2 or 3 months, but after that it just feels like, oh, it just consumes my life. And so, you know, what you said, oh, well, it doesn't matter if you show up to Salvation Army at you know, 3 o'clock. You know, for me, that would be the problem, is I would, you know, get up and I would get into all this preparation, and then it would be like 4:30, and I'm like, well, they're going to close at 5. You know, I'm sitting there looking all good in the suit, all ready to my standards and expectations of how I'm supposed to look, you know, shaved, showered, whatever. And that's kind of the problem, is I get caught up in, and it's difficult to, you know, do that on a consistent basis.
Okay, so now, everybody's different. With him, he made it clear that the one big barrier for him was getting up on time or whatever. So I gave him the freedom to do it when he wants. But I'm hearing a different core undergirding problem with you, which is, you use the term OCD. It's like you make it so hard, so odious to get ready. You're compulsive about getting being in the suit and having everything perfect. Then you probably take a long time even to shave, let alone get dressed and all the rest of this. Then it becomes this huge mountain of a barrier. What if I said that the answer, if you can do it, and sometimes people with OCD need medication, sometimes they don't, but if Father Nemko here on Easter am giving you the following advice, which is, allow yourself no more than 30 minutes to get ready. Whatever you can do in 30 minutes, you can do. Quick shower. Don't need to wear a suit. In fact, you know,
I'm just using suit as an example.
All right.
But, you know, you want to, especially, I think that's a lot of it is, you know, I build it up in my mind, because when you are going for, and I've tried to just be like, well, look, there's other places out there, and if I strike out with this one place, I'm going to just stay optimistic and go on to the next. But, yeah, you know, when you, I feel like I put a lot of stock into that first impression, but I don't feel like that's entirely unfounded. And I, at least personally, don't know that, especially if I haven't, you know, shaved in a couple of days, I definitely feel like there's no way I could project the image that would allow me to feel confident in my interactions. I don't feel like I could do that in half an hour, and maybe...
Yes, you could. Shaving should take 5 minutes.
What's that?
I want you to shave. I'm not wanting you to go in there with 3 days of beard. No. But if you have like a timer that's set for 30 minutes, that's time to shave. I don't want you stinking. I want you to shower. Of course I do. But a shower can be 10 minutes. I shave in the shower, and I'm in and out of the shower in 12 minutes. So, you know, and you can be dressed in 10 more minutes. And at that point, you look plenty good enough. Your first impression is not going to be made bad because you are unpresentable. Your first impression is going to be good or bad if you are able to describe what you bring to the table well. That's what's going to count. And if you take 2-3 hours to, quote, be ready for the first impression, you're going to make that preparation so odious that you're not going to go up and go in for the job interviews. I'd rather see you look as good as you can do in 30 minutes, even if it's not as good as it's going to be in 2 hours of preparation. You're going to end up on doing far better and far more job interviews, far better overall, and you're going to get a job far faster, and it'll be less painful than if you're torturing yourself with this OCD perfection thing. Because let me tell you, this may sound crazy, but if I walked in a
well,
t-shirt...
Not crazy with a big OCD.
I'm sorry, what? Say it again. I didn't hear that.
I said it may sound crazy, but not crazier than being OCD.
Right, right. Well, and we'll deal with the OCD more in a minute. But if I walked in unshaven, in a t-shirt, into a job interview, but I was on my A game in terms of what I said, how I listened, presented myself well, was enthusiastic, I would bet that I would, you know, maybe not, that there will be some employees say, how dare he walk in a t-shirt. But there are plenty, I would bet that when day is done, I would get a job much faster than if I took 2 hours to print myself in the perfect outfit and therefore went on fewer interviews. I want you to look good, but don't overly emphasize the power of the looks to make the first impression.
Oh,
in fact,
I think that's true, but as I kind of alluded to, I think a lot of it, for me at least, is that sense of confidence, and that I wouldn't feel capable of being on my A game. If I go into the interview and I'm self-conscious thinking, oh, man, you know, can he tell that, you know, I need to trim my nails, or, you know, can he tell that maybe, you know, my, you know, beard isn't straight or whatever?
That's what you've got to work on changing. That's the piece right there. Recognizing that your higher ability does not depend on the length of your nails or whether your beard is straight. It is not. That's the OCD part. That's the erroneous thinking. It's recognizing that your higher ability is a function of how many people you pitch and how competent you appear and how personable you appear. Whether your beard is straight or any of that crap is so much less important, and probably not important at all. They may not even notice it. That if you let that stop you from getting ready to go on these interviews because you've made it so odious, that's what's going to make you unemployable. The thing I want you to remember is that 30 minutes of preparation is going to be far wiser for you getting employed. In fact, freeing you from the slavery, what you call self-identified, is the craziness of OCD. And as I said, some people need medication, some people need counseling, and some people just need what I just did for you right here, which is to give you the freedom to realize that 30 minutes is all you need, and then do not allow yourself in that job interview to think, oh, I'm wondering if my beard being not straight or my fingernails not being trimmed. You got to not allow yourself to go there. You've got to be in gear and saying, how can I best present myself? How can I listen to this employer and find out his needs? How can I connect with him emotionally? If you devote all your mental attention to that and not the stupid crap about your beard or your nails, you're going to get a job and you're going to be happy. You're going to be less stressed.
I think that's definitely true. I'll let you go give your 3 minutes to someone else. But there are other issues to tie into it, but I guess I just think it's funny because I actually was just working a temp job last week. That was only a one-day job, but they called up the agency and let me go and gave, cited issues about my presentability, which was really funny because that day I was actually on the heels of a conversation with my friend thinking, you know, they're not going to be scrutinizing me like I scrutinize me. It doesn't matter if my beard's all trimmed, you know. It's like these... You know, just a slacks and a shirt, I'll be fine. So, I you're right. The in terms of the getting employed, it's a function of how wide a net you cast. But
and
there
I
are
also
definitely sticklers who...
You got to change that. You know what? I'm not buying it. If you're a competent person and, you know, because your nails are not done right or your beard isn't quite straight, that is probably... You know, it's easy to say that, but I would bet anything... The reason you got laid off was not that. It was something that it might have been harder to say. Maybe that you weren't that competent, or maybe your compulsivity was getting in the way. Or
well,
you.
I think it was a variety of things that
right.
Magnified one another.
Right.
But one of the things that they did cite was, well, you know, his pants are too baggy. And I'm thinking, you know, they're slacks. I'm wearing a button-up shirt. But I guess... That was my feeling, was that they cited this one thing, but it was the overall package that they were
right.
looking at and saying, oh, well, he looks kind of scruffy and sort of magnified one another.
I don't want you looking scruffy, but there's a psychological term called confirmation bias,
yep.
which is that we all tend to latch on to ideas that match our existing belief system.
Well, and that's exactly what I'd figured, because there were other issues that came into play, and
right.
that's when I said, okay, I need to let it go.
Right. So don't get compulsive about the dress. Look, I don't want you smelling. I do want you to shave. You know, I don't want you to be rumpled, but you can do that in 30 minutes. Make that your challenge so that it doesn't become so odious. Take
all
it right. 30, maybe 60, but no 2 hours.
No.
Okay, and feel free. I would love it if you call back next week and give us a report.
I'll do it. It seems like I'm, you know, if you say 60 minutes, it seems like I'm doing really good on the 45, and then suddenly, oh, man, where'd the hour and a half come from? What happened to the last 45 minutes?
That's what I meant. I want you to get a kitchen timer, and I want you to keep that in front of you so you get a feel for when 5 minutes have gone by, 10 minutes.
Relative. It feels like I'm under the gun. But, yeah, I will.
I think only as a temporary exercise. You will feel under the gun. But it's a game. Think of it positively, like a game. Okay, this is the game. How presentable can I make myself in 30 minutes? Make that a game. Make it like a video game, like it's a fun game. Instead of odious, try that and see if you'll get a better... You'll learn about what time is. So many people have a poor sense of time. That way you won't think that, oh, my God, where did the time go? Do it for a while. Eventually, you won't have to do it at all. Just like training wheels on a bicycle.
ago.
All right, Guy.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you, man. Bye. All right, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemko. Let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with, welcome to the show. How can I help you?
Oh, hi, this is Mary. How are you, Marty?
Hi, Mary. I am just fine. How are you?
Oh, good, good. And happy Passover to you.
And happy Easter to you.
Thank you. I guess I wanted to tell you I was so moved by the service that you brought to the gentleman who was trying to find a place to volunteer, and I was so moved by his intention
right.
to do service. And I guess I wanted him to, I hope he's still listening, because I want him to know I'm thinking about him. I'm praying for him. And,
sweet.
Because we need people like him in the world.
Right.
And also I had this flash. I thought, wow, if exercise is so important to him, maybe he could go to any number of recovery programs in the city and volunteer to walk people that
love
need
it.
That as part of their recovery
love
exercise.
It. Great idea.
Yeah, so just a thought, and thank you for all of your service.
And thank you for the Easter gift you've just given to him and to other listeners. Again, using your natural tendencies in a constructive way is a great rule for all of us. So, Mary, I appreciate you very much.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
All right,
okay.
Take care.
Bye.
Yeah, that whole notion. Think about right now. Take a moment. Think about something that you naturally gravitate to, not that you say you're interested in, but how you actually spend your time. Do you spend a lot of time reading? Do you spend a lot of time watching TV? Do you spend a lot of time exercising? Do you spend a lot of time helping people on the phone? What is it that you do naturally? And then ask yourself, how could I incorporate that into my life? I play the piano. I love to play the piano. That's what I do. I was born as a musician. That's who I am. And I figured out a way to incorporate it as much as I can into my life. So I do play the piano for my clients, to, hopefully as inspiration to them now, especially because I got this stupid hand condition. I can only play with seven fingers. You know, I play for my clients. I coach a lot of musicians. You know, I wrote this one-woman show for a client who's going to be on. By the way, she's going to be my guest next week again. She's coming back. She's fabulous. Talking about how she went from being basically an $8-an-hour retail clerk, even though she had a Berkeley degree, and what she did, partly using her creativity in music to create, you know, you wouldn't think it has anything to do with it, but she's got a really good day job now at Children's Hospital. So what can you do? How can you use what you naturally find yourself gravitating to do, cooking, whatever it is, and how can you build that into your life? You wouldn't think that my being a piano player has anything to do with being a career counselor, and yet it's been very potent as a tool in my career counseling. Okay, back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, hey. Yeah, my name is Dennis, and I recently was laid off. I was working for a company for 13 years.
Mm.
I'm 52.
Mm-hmm.
I've been unemployed for 6 months now.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually been, you know, studying for certification. I do IT work.
Mm-hmm.
I live in Berkeley. And, you know, I've been to a lot of interviews.
Mm-hmm.
But just haven't really been able to get anybody to hire me.
Okay. Let's go ahead.
I think sometimes there's, in the IT world right now, they're looking for people that can do 2 to 3 jobs.
I mean 2 to 3 different skill sets, you know, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just not sure really where to go. I am working on some certification to kind of upgrade my skills. And, you know, I am actually can be pretty creative and, you know, I mean, a really phenomenally hard worker and all that kind of stuff. But I'm also kind of somebody at the age where I just can't work, you know, 10-hour days every day and not work work Saturdays and do that kind of stuff, I think, which is a lot of IT companies are really kind of expecting at this point. So I'm not sure what to do.
Okay, a couple of thoughts. You're absolutely right. I could BS you and say that, age is not a barrier, but particularly the IT world tends to be a young person's game, both because the skill sets tend to be fresher and because the hours, that certainly at crunch times, there can be very long hours. So what often people who are, you know, good, you said you're creative and you've got some IT skill, you're trying to boost it, is getting out of that game where you're trying to compete with all, not only the people in America, but the people in Asia who they hire like crazy to do a lot of the IT work. So often what's smarter is to try to get a job in an old line industry where they need an IT, perhaps desktop support person for that workplace. I'm talking about, for example, mainline older industries, like whether it be the trades, you know, the construction trades, plumbing companies, food companies, transportation, you know, trucking companies, all those kind of companies, they're small. I mean, a big corporation's not going to hire you. But if there's a, like a 5 or a 10 person or a 20 person or a law firm, 5 or 10 or 20 person company that needs somebody to provide desktop support for all the people who are computer users who are not really top notch. You know, if you're a salesman for plumbing supplies, I have a client, for example, who runs a business in selling heating and ventilating equipment, tubes and pipes and heaters and stuff. There are people who work there. They're technologically not exactly brilliant. They're sales guys or sales assistants. If you're the desktop manager for them, helping them with their various computer problems, they're not expecting you to be the super whiz on everything. You're not going to be working 12 hours a day. Should that be more of the focus of the kind of job you try to get?
Well, it could be. I mean, I'm not saying I'm not opposed to that, but I do, you know, I do like working. I mean, I'm not, you know, I do want to have an outside life.
Sure.
You know? I actually find those kind of gigs, I mean, I'm kind of getting some little, kind of small little gigs like that on the side. But I find it difficult to kind of get anything where it's economical.
Right. So what I'm saying is, of course, those little crappy things that are part, you know, part-time or project work are no good. But, you know, as I've said ad nauseum on this show, unless your resume is absolutely super and you're a superstar, the best way to get a job is to get into a job opening early in its lifespan. And what that means is for you to make warm or cold contacts with potential employers, 20 or 30 of them, telling them what you bring to the table, and they either create a position for you because they have not yet, they didn't realize they had a need, or they had a need but they haven't yet advertised it. The best way to, you know, if you wait until a job is advertised, then you're competing with everybody in the world, and there are going to be dozens or hundreds of resumes, and you're not going to get the job unless you are a superstar. So if you identified maybe one or two what they call vertical markets, something you may know something about already, maybe in your hobbies or you've worked for a certain similar kind of company before, whether it be a law firm or a construction firm or a restaurant industry, you know, a restaurant, small restaurant chain or whatever, and you pitch yourself, you say, these are the things I bring to the table. Yes, I want a full-time job. I'm willing to take a half-time job. And these are the kind of things I could do for you. That is normally the best way to land a job, and you're less likely to also have the age discrimination thing, because when they are advertising a job, they're going to see all these 20-somethings who have a fresh degree or a fresh skill set that have just, they're newly minted, and it's very tough for a 52-year-old to succeed. If you instead get in early in the lifespan of a job, you're more likely to succeed. Make sense?
Yeah. It's a little bit of it's going to have to sit in on, you know, I'm going to have to think about this, and I'm
right.
Going to call in two more weeks after I've really thought it. But, yeah, I think I'll ponder it.
Okay, and that's thank you very much for calling, and that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday. As I said, not only will I do 3-minute workovers on callers, I got so many positive responses when Jeffrey Givens, my career counseling client, came in. She sang on the show, told her story. This time she's going to tell how, despite being a Berkeley graduate, she had to cope with being a data entry clerk and what she's done to rise up. She's also going to sing for us again in her amazing singing voice. I'll accompany her on the piano. She's that one-woman show. She does Big Black and Shy. Anyway, until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.